Welcome to Banking on KC. I'm your host, Kelly Scanlon. Thank you for joining us. With us on this episode is Karen Hornig, the CEO of National Insurance Producer Registry, which is a platform for credentialing insurance agents and brokers. Karen is also the chair of the KC Tech Council, an independent nonprofit that's focused on making Kansas City a great home for tech. Welcome, Karen.
Thank you, Kelly. It's great to be with you.
I mentioned that the Tech Council has this overarching vision to make Kansas City a great home for tech. And there's three pillars that are part of that vision. If you would take just a minute to talk to us about those three pillars and how they work together to achieve that vision of making Kansas City this really robust tech hub.
Sure. So the three pillars for the KC Tech Council are industry access, workforce development, and policy advocacy. And all three of them really mesh together. Industry access means the Tech Council is here to give voice to the 4,000 plus businesses and organizations that employ over 100,000 tech workers in our Kansas City region. Collectively, the industry contributes nearly $12 billion to our local economy. And we're very lucky to have large enterprise employers in our area who are leaders in key industries like healthcare records and aviation and telecommunications. Mm-hmm. And so with that kind of demand, it flows immediately into the concept of workforce development. Nationally and here in Kansas City, there are not enough skilled workers to fill open technology positions. And the KC Tech Council has recently signed an agreement with a national partner leading tech-based apprenticeships in other markets in the U.S. We've got to get creative about how we fill these slots. And the apprenticeship model has proven to be very effective in hiring candidates with non-traditional backgrounds and placing candidates into well-paying jobs. And these programs have a proven track record of attracting more diverse candidates into the industry, which provides a whole new pipeline of talent for regional employers. And then lastly, state and federal public policy that impacts technology is the third pillar of the Tech Council's mission. And fellow board member Josh Maxfield, who's the Associate General Counsel at Garmin, leads our public policy committee, and Polsinelli helps us out in Jefferson City. And recently, the council has led efforts to reform computer science education in both Kansas and Missouri, leading to the subject of computer science now counting as a high school graduation credit when before it was simply an elective. Mm-hmm. And we joined several dozen other organizations in this effort, including KC STEM Alliance and Science City. And we recently signed letters supporting a reversal of the federal decision to ban H-1B visas for international workers. Because the tech industry competes globally for talent, for particularly large employers, there simply aren't enough workers in the U.S. With the skills necessary to meet demand. Mm-hmm. So long term, we still need that additional funding and push to support STEM education for K through 12 level across the U.S. But in the meantime, we have to have those high skilled workers from other nations to fill a critical void. So those are just two of the public policy issues that we've been working on recently.
You mentioned the programs that are being developed in order to develop workers, basically. Where are those programs housed? Who administers those? Are those the individual companies that you're working with to develop those? Is it the KC Tech Council who's actually offering those programs? Where are those being delivered from?
The Tech Council essentially will be the hub of the wheel. There are a variety of different organizations that provide the actual training who specialize in particularly career changers, helping people transition from one career into technology. So learning how to code. And there are a number of different ones in Kansas City. The apprenticeship program will leverage all those programs. It's program agnostic. So you don't have to necessarily go to one of those programs, but we will serve as the hub of the wheel that will connect the apprenticeship programs with those coding programs and with the employers who are interested in participating.
Okay, so any potential businesses that are listening to this episode and are interested in that should just get in touch directly with the KC Tech Council.
Absolutely.
Back in the late 90s, 2000, tech meant somebody who had a network. You know, they come in and they would put your network together, troubleshoot it. That was now every business is really a tech business. You just really can't have a real chance at success unless you are using technology to leverage so many different functions of your business. So how do you define tech?
The Kansas City Tech Council has some exceptional data on its website that really outlines what those different categories of workers are. And we do an employment report on a regular basis so that other businesses have access. But you're right, it isn't just somebody who knows how to fix a desktop or laptop computer. We're talking about software engineers, software architects, quality assurance engineers, business analysts, and that's just in on the software side. There are people who work with data and a whole categories of people who work in data analytics and warehousing data. And then there are the people on the infrastructure side, either the systems upon which the computers work or the actual hardware itself. So there are a number of layers when we talk about technology, when we talk about computer science. And not all of those are just coding. Many of them are more business facing, but the person has to have a fundamental understanding of how the technology works.
One of the things that I really find interesting, Karen, is that I'm sitting here listening to you rattle off all these terms and all of this information, but you don't have a formal background in technology. Yet here you are, you're leading a company, NIPR, and you chair an organization, the KC Tech Council, that are leading change in the tech industry. So how did you land in this space? What was your path?
Well, Kelly, I wish I could tell you that I developed a well-considered and executed strategy for my career. But, you know, the fact is I've sort of specialized in getting and keeping jobs for which I was completely unqualified. But I'm a lawyer by training, and I had many opportunities over my career to use that original training in law and apply it in different areas. Legal training is actually very good as a foundation for doing other things, because I spent most of my legal career as a litigator. And when you have a new case, you have to learn the business. If it's corporate litigation, you have to immerse yourself in that business. So every new professional challenge was just a new set of facts. It was just a new case that I had to learn. And that's how I approached the work at NIPR. I had this opportunity because I served as deputy insurance commissioner for the state of Maryland. So I understood the regulatory side. I understood the industry. So coming over to NIPR then, what I had to learn was the technology piece. And so I leveraged a lot of the same skills that I used as a lawyer. I went to experts. The experts were my staff, and I leveraged them as my teachers. I gathered evidence. I did a whole lot of reading and studying. And while I do not claim to be a technologist, I am not. I have found it fascinating, endlessly fascinating and interesting to learn about how these organizations work.
This has been a theme throughout your career, you know, stepping into those situations, as you just said, opportunities where you don't necessarily have that strong expertise or experience, and yet you embrace them, like you said. But so many times, this brings up something else that I hear a lot. I'm involved in a lot of different women's organizations, and I hear this a lot, that women especially disqualify themselves from jobs, from political office, from board service, whatever it might be, just because they take a look at what's required, or somebody's trying to, you know, talk them into joining something, and they take a look at the list and they disqualify themselves because they cannot check off every box. And yet you did not do that. You decided to embrace it anyway. I know you said that your legal background prepared you very well for asking questions, but it just strikes me that there's something more that's involved as well, because those are big leaps. Talk to us a little bit more about just your approach to challenges.
For years, I was sure I was not smart enough, experienced enough, or talented enough to become a corporate leader. And while many people lack confidence in their ability, as you say, Kelly, women particularly avoid highlighting their strengths. Instead, they downplay their gifts and talents. I was lucky. I have a remarkable mentor. He has worked with me since I was a very young lawyer. And I developed greater confidence by taking risks and accepting opportunities, even when I was convinced I was unprepared. I always say to young colleagues now, trust people when they see something in you that you don't see in yourself, and have confidence in them that they're wise. Mm-hmm. And many women struggle, and as I did, in striking a work-life balance, promotion or relocation opportunities are turned down as we put the family first. And so I took the view that I could have it all, just not all at once. And this view resulted in slower career growth early in my career, but later opportunities that I would not have imagined, like leading NIPR. And I think with age comes wisdom, and I felt more confident in myself as I moved through my career. And that's when I was willing to take risks. The bottom line, I've been very lucky to have been offered so many opportunities in a variety of what, you know, what we call verticals. And you learn from one and you take that and you apply it to the next thing.
Yeah. Success breeds success is one of the things I'm hearing you say there. I know the numbers are growing in terms of women in STEM, but there's still a lot of work to be done to encourage women to embrace the field. I know the Kansas City area has made really good progress in that regard. Do you see this primarily as a recruitment issue, like we talked about when we first opened the conversation, or do you think it's something broader, something more systemic that is required in order to attract women?
I do think it's more systemic. There was an excellent article written last year by journalist named Clive Thomas in the New York Times called The Secret History of Women in Coding. And it really was excellent. And it shows that computer programmers were originally almost all women.
Yes, I've seen some of those articles.
Right. And that really changed with the advent of the personal computer, and the personal computer becoming a learning tool, a tool around which particularly young men really gravitated for gaming and coding as more of a hobby, or computer building is more of a hobby. And so then we saw this real divergence where women dropped out of the industry. What we also see is that, and I'm talking about software development because that's that's primarily what we do. Software isn't developed for itself. Software is developed in order to deliver a business result for an organization. And so you need lots of different ways of looking at business problems to deliver good software. And so diversity around the team table is very important. And the issue of the systemic problem that we see today, the reality that we see today, is that women make up, most studies say, only about 20% of technology jobs. And a lot of women come into technology not having a computer science or a formal engineering or computer science background. And so it is why the more non-traditional educational programs, certificates, those kinds of things are very important. So it is, I believe, a systemic problem. And that means there's no easy fix. There's no silver bullet. It requires a multifaceted response and approach to solving that problem.
Mm-hmm. What would be a few of those? I know we don't have time to go into solving that whole problem in the next 10 minutes, but what would be some of the things that need to be addressed that would go a long way towards solving it?
Apprenticeship, obviously, is a big one, I think. Mentorship, programs that we have for encouraging women, especially girls, girls who code, those kinds of problems, to solve that problem that we see in elementary and middle schools where girls are doing great in math and science, and then they have a tendency to drop off as they get into middle school and then go on to high school. And so programs that really target those kinds of things. But I think we have this sort of fundamental marketing problem when we talk about technology. And that is that we talk about technology like it is this mysterious thing. And it can be really hard and difficult. And yes, it involves numbers and math and some science, but it's art and science. It is about solving business problems. And so I think we have to talk about technology more as the means to an end versus the end. We need to talk more about what technology brings us as business organizations, as societies. Talking about the mission of it, I think, makes it more attractive to more young people.
Yeah, that higher purpose.
Exactly. Yeah, higher purpose. Exactly. Mm-hmm. And frankly, the more risks that women take to enter the field, the younger women see it then as an opportunity for them. Trust me when I say, if I was able to do this, anybody is able to make the transition into a technology company. This is not my wheelhouse. I was a history major, but that ability to think broadly and deeply about problems serves you regardless of the area that you're working in. So I think the emphasis on career changing, we have a whole segment of our population that feels like it doesn't have an appropriate place in the economy. We have a lot of people in our company who have come out of the military and trained up to enter technology, have career changed to enter technology, and providing really great programs that make it easier for people to do that while they're raising their families and, you know, all the challenges that we all have, I think will really serve the industry really well.
Yeah, some great insights there on how to think about it, you know, not being the end game, part of a higher purpose, solving business problems. Those are great marketing messages for recruitment. Absolutely. The Kansas City area tech scene is growing. You're making progress on the KC Tech Council's overall mission of making Kansas City a tech hub. So how would you describe the current KC area tech scene? Where are the gaps? What are the opportunities? How do you bridge it?
Well, in addition to the workforce gap, which I feel like we've talked about a lot, the area's tech scene, I think, is very vibrant. Bush Creek Partners has just launched a new accelerator program that was announced in the Business Journal last week. And I think Kansas City's tech industry has really a great opportunity to aspire to become one of the most equitable and diverse hubs for the industry in the Midwest and the country. And we're consistently ranked as one of the best cities for women in tech. And, you know, that data, again, can be found on KC Tech Council's website. And we can expand this to support increased racial diversity and equity within the sector. And we have the opportunity to create a perception to differentiate KC's tech scene from competing markets, especially in the Midwest. And, you know, a lot of the industry is driven by perception. And while I would say Kansas City does not have a negative perception. Our presence on the national stage, I think, would be enhanced by maybe leaving our Midwestern humbleness behind and being more willing to share our successes with the world. Mm-hmm. And the fact that we are a centralized location and we have an opportunity to watch the tech sector grow along other important industries in our region, transportation, logistics, healthcare, agriculture, all areas that are blowing up in terms of technology. You know, agritech is gigantic. The Hyperloop is a real thing and is going to be a real thing.
Yes, it is.
That is really KC getting back to its roots. And so that makes me very excited.
Yeah.
There's the growing demand for internet and how large enterprise corporations can more safely store and access data from a centralized source. You know, we just had a groundbreaking here in Kansas City for a large data center project. And that's really critical. That's really critical. Google Fiber, that's a great benefit to being in Kansas City. So I think there really are real opportunities. One of the realities of the pandemic, it may be that people want to spread out a bit more. Mm-hmm. And so the Midwest may well be a more attractive area for many people.
All of these things that you just mentioned, all opportunities of achieving that goal of Kansas City being a great home for tech, how would achieving that goal change the city? What would Kansas City itself look like if it really did become everything it could be in terms of a tech hub?
Yeah, I think Kansas City should again be viewed by the rest of the nation as a crossroads. And now it would be as a tech crossroads. And to do that, we must be a community that is open and welcoming to others. We cannot be insular. And that will change Kansas City. But the most important area of opportunity is to ensure we have a diverse and high-skilled workforce to sustain the growth in the industry. And that growth has to be supported by key policy-based infrastructure, like the computer science education funding and workforce development. Kelly, you know, I'm not from Kansas City. I've been here now for 6 years. I relocated here 6 years ago. Mm-hmm. And I hear people say all the time, you know, we're one of the nation's best kept secrets. And I always say, why? Why would you want to keep it secret? make it a great story. We need to live the values of a 21st century city that really has that concept of being a crossroads and being open both to changes in our industry and changes in our community.
Great advice there. Karen, thank you so much for sharing your insights, your inspiration for women especially, and just best of luck on achieving this goal. It sounds like you're on the way there.
Thank you, Kelly. I really appreciate the opportunity.
Absolutely. And you said that there is a website, kctechcouncil.com?
That's correct. Yep.
For anybody who wants to go out and dive further into some of the stats that she was talking about, kctechcouncil.com. Thank you again, Karen.
Thank you.
Hello, I'm Joe Close, president of Country Club Bank. Thank you to Karen Hornig for joining us on this episode of Banking on KC. The KC Tech Council's vision of Kansas City as a thriving tech hub is attainable. Kansas City is already a leader in smart city technology and is making strides in ag tech, fintech, telemedicine, and many other technology-driven sectors. As a city with a long history of being a crossroads to other places, Kansas City today is at a crossroads moment for making the critical decisions necessary for becoming a world-class leader in technology innovation. As Karen said, Kansas City must be willing to be inclusive and embrace diversity in order to cultivate the best ideas and attract the brightest minds. That takes the effort of the entire community, not just the KC Tech Council. We're banking on you, Kansas City, Country Club Bank, member FDIC.